commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode number 26.
Dreaming of that time you flashed your brains and turned on the neighbors.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And we have with us today James Knapp, author of The Silent Army, State of Decay, and the upcoming Element Zero. And we're going to be talking about just zombies, everything to do with zombies, or, yeah, well, everything we can within the time limit. But
we like the trends.
Yeah, well, we've been... You know, obviously with Walking Dead, as this new hit TV show is just renewed for a second season, even though it's only been 3 episodes.
And there's only 3 more episodes, I believe, this season. So it's kind of big that they're getting 13 more for next season.
Yeah, no kidding. Have you been watching the show, James?
I haven't actually had a chance to see it yet.
Oh.
It's good. I mean, well, for television.
I think it's on Hulu, right?
I think the first episode is. I think they don't have the other ones. They might. I stopped waiting. Found other ways to get it.
This is a great follow-up to our pirating episode.
Yeah. It's good.
It is good because it actually, I mean, it goes with the whole 28 Days Later sort of take on zombie. In terms of it's the more the sociological effects of a zombie apocalypse than it is necessarily about zombies. Although you have some very nice looking zombies too.
Nice looking? What does a nice looking zombie look like?
I mean, shut up. Okay. They're not very nice looking. They're high quality zombies. I don't know.
You mean that they look realistic?
Very
like
realistic looking zombies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because then.
Real zombies.
Real zombies
is what you mean. Not nice zombies, because I'm not so sure, you know, I want to eat your brains is not so nice.
Well, there is actually a movie with a nice zombie in it. At least one.
Hocus. Are you thinking Shaun of the Dead?
No, Hocus Pocus.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Very nice zombie. Although, yeah, I suppose you could go with Shaun of the Dead. Not really nice, per se.
Yeah, but he plays video games, sort of, at the end. But, well... I guess the big question is what is, in terms of film, since zombies are, I think, really enormous in the film and, well, now television, I guess, is, and what is everyone's favorite zombie film, broadly defined, since I know there's big arguments over, like, where are you going to stick, like, 28 Days Later, because it's, you know, some people are real purists about, you know, you can't have infections from biological agents, or they have to be dead and come back to life, or whatever, but just your favorite zombie film. So what about you, James?
I think my current favorite is actually the... I really enjoyed the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah, I really liked
that. That was actually good.
Yeah,
it was actually really good. I like that one, too, in terms of the Romeros.
I have not watched any of those, because I'm a chicken.
I have never seen a zombie film.
I mean, I've watched some zombie movies, but I couldn't do that until... I was in my 20s, because before that I was, you know, I would pee myself if I watched anything with zombies in it. So, I'm still going with 28 Days Later.
Because I
like the psychological aspect more than I like just zombies. Or you could go with Evil Dead, although I've heard that that's not classified as a zombie movie because they're demonic possessions or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they're not quite zombies in Evil Dead, so you have to stick with 28 Days Later. And that's probably my favorite, although I did watch zombie movies when I was a kid, and I have no idea which ones they were. I just remember they were comical. But I don't know if they were intended to be comical. I don't know. I don't remember which movies they were. They were like the... Not Night of the Living Dead, because that's the original Romero, but the...
Oh, you think it was just like Return of the Living Dead?
Yeah, with the, I don't know, the weird chemical agent and the guys that, like, whined because they were dying. They spend, like, 20 minutes complaining, and they're like, we're dying! And you're like, okay, and then they become zombie and eating. When I was a kid, I was terrified by the zombies, but I found that hilarious because it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, the split dog comes back to life. I saw them.
Oh, yes, yeah.
To me, it was always the thing that was terrifying is the actual idea of things that are long dead more than the recent dead. So, like, I have less of a problem with newer films that deal more with the recent dead, with the infection. But things coming up from cemeteries kind of scare me.
Yeah, that... I don't like cemeteries because they're creepy.
Exactly. I mean, they're not really my thing. So, but I lied. I just realized that I have actually seen the new Dawn of the Dead, and I did enjoy that one. But again, since it came out in 2004, I was old enough by then that I could at least detach myself from the horror of dead people.
And not pee.
And not pee. I mean, that's usually a bonus.
Well, I did think that the recent Dawn of the Dead was pretty good because of, for the same reason that you, Jen, you like the 28 Days Later, there's a lot of that sort of sociological. I mean, these are people trapped in this mall.
Right.
And sort of their interactions while being surrounded by basically hundreds of things that just want to eat them.
Although I find with most zombie films, I just spend most of the movie being pissed off at the people that are being surrounded by zombies. I mean, you literally have, it's pretty typical. You have the one guy who seems intelligent. And then, of course, in Dawn of the Dead, he dies, but right at the end.
Oh, that's right, because he gets infected. Right? And
exactly. Yeah. And everybody else is just stupid and panicky and drive me crazy. That's half the reason I can't watch most of these films, because I just sit there going, oh my goodness, stop. I mean, I think that's my problem with most horror films in general, is that you really just spend most of your time screaming at the idiots on screen, and you start rooting for the zombies at a certain point.
Well, okay, all right, well...
I don't know.
So I guess the question is, because everybody... I guess you would say there's a resurgence of zombie stuff. There's Universal Dead, we talked to the creators of that, which is being turned into a movie. There's... Romero is still surprisingly making movies, even though I think his... kind of going downhill lately. And then there's all of these zombie books. So I guess the question is, why zombies? What is it about zombies that we're fascinated with?
I don't know. James, I mean, that's actually a good question for you. What inspired you to start writing about zombies? Although I realize that you call them the reanimated in your novels.
Yeah, actually, I mean, you know, really in a way, I kind of... the whole zombie resurgence is something I sort of stumbled into. I didn't originally write it to be, you know, necessarily a traditional zombie story, but the timing turned out to be pretty good because it's, you know, it's kind of hot right now.
There is that. But I mean, in general then, what makes them so fascinating to you?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Part of it is the, you know, the cannibalism taboo, mixed with the, you know, the whole, in the same way that, like, almost the Blob was scary, you know, it's like that idea that there's this menace looming that continues to grow, with each day and absorb everything, you know, that it grabs, including, you know, your friends, you, and not only will you be killed, but you'll become part of it, you know.
Right.
That's true. That it's, I've been to a few academic conferences where zombies have been kind of the main thing for all of the panels on horror literature. And you often hear the critiques that they represent the sort of mindless consumption of capitalism. But
that's, I think, one of the most generic, newer ones.
I know. It
is. You know, I mean, that's
is,
like the most commonly accepted, it's a consumerism. And
right.
Well, with Dawn of the Dead, the original, and I believe George Romero actually said that he totally wasn't making any remarks on consumerism, but it just, you know, happened to be a familiar place to people, and that's where people were going, or whoever it was. Was that Romero? I'm sorry.
It probably was, since he's what the person everybody cites.
Exactly. So, I mean, since then, it's become this really popular, you know, you've got corporate zombies, you've got consumer zombies, you know, television zombies, which my children are, you know. It's that mindless, you know, it's the cutting off of sentience, consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. Like losing, like I think the base of it is the idea that, like, you know, if we were stripped away of all of our the things that make us human, that make us different from animals, you know, how would we behave? I play with that in State of Decay and, The Silent Army, where basically the zombies in that story, in those stories rather, they have all of, like, their brain chemistry stripped away, which takes away a lot of their emotion. They still have a lot of their intellect. But you see them, without the benefit of those higher functions, you see them let go of a lot of their taboos, you know.
Right. That's interesting.
So basically they're autistic zombies.
Sort of.
Sorry. Maybe that was kind of taboo of me to say, but...
Yeah.
I'm a bad
way
person.
To offend a lot
well,
of people,
no,
Jen.
I'm sorry,
good job.
But that is essentially what autism does, is that it's, to a lot of people, it's not that they're completely incapable of, you know, the emotional aspect, but they pretty much are, of empathy and, you know, the things that a lot of people think are what make us human. But they're still perfectly intelligent, you know, and most of them can end up, you know, mimicking personal interactions. And they learn what's taboo, but it's something that has to be learned as opposed to something that supposedly is somewhat instinctual. Although, even things like, you know, eating your neighbors, that's learned bad, you know. You got to teach the kid, don't eat the neighbors.
I think I hear you saying that autistic people are cannibals. Can we quote you on that?
Oh,
no. Oh, no.
That's.
There goes my political career. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's interesting because there's autism, and then I forget the name of the... It's a condition where they're not autistic, but they are incapable of parsing out the sort of codes of social behavior.
Yeah.
I can't forget what it's called.
I thought that was autism.
So. No, it's not autism because they have emotions, but they are unable to gauge what is acceptable behavior.
Right. On what
It was James, you brought up the taboos, and obviously, at least within most Western countries, I'll say, because I don't know if at all. I mean, we do have this huge taboo about eating other people, but in some ancient Eastern, I don't want to say Eastern, because I'm not 100% if they're Eastern religions or East places elsewhere, where there's actually there's no taboo about what you consume that is from a human body. I forget the name of there's a tribe in India, for example, that will consume dead flesh. They will consume certain fluids from the human body, and all of these things they feel as though that actually purifies them or makes them more. So there's like this opposite, like for us it's like, no, you can't eat people, that's you don't do that, but for them it's this complete opposite, that there's a power to be gained from it.
Then their zombies would probably be doing something else that would be taboo to them. I don't know what their taboos are in that sense, but you still would have something that would be totally horrifying to them. Like for us, eating our own. I mean, it's the Donner Party is still one of the most popular mythic cultures in California. You know, it's their mythic urban myths and whatnot, and although it's true, but whatever. It's definitely part of the narrative because it's so horrifying somehow. And there's a reason that movies like Silence of the Lambs are so popular.
I think we have an ingrained fear of being eaten also, right?
Right.
Oh, definitely.
I'm a donor, so I suppose I have less of that fear than some people.
What?
Well, no, it was interesting. In the second episode of Walking Dead, Duke, you watch this when
Oh yes.
They smear their that was gross. But he pulls out the card, and they are somehow, they feel better about the fact that they have to butcher this zombie because he was a donor. It's like, that honestly, it kind of makes sense. As long as I'm not being eaten alive, you know, that's horrifying. But I don't know. I think it's more the horde aspect. And some people have related it to the current trend to 9/11 and the fear of terrorism. It's this nameless, unwavering horde of people that you can't convince that what they're doing is wrong somehow, even though there are no actual hordes. They have related the zombie resurgence to that fear. The mindless aspect of you know, almost cult-like aspect of it. I'm surprised there's not more cults, you know, like more of a cult influence on zombie fiction, to be honest.
We don't have any comments lately, so. No.
Oh, shut up. That was obscure. Thank you.
Everyone will get it. Hail Bob references. Come on, guys. We were all old enough, and I'm sure the people who listen to the show are old enough to remember.
Now
the alien spaceship behind them. Yeah.
But no, seriously. I mean,
what happened to that spaceship? Where was it? I wonder. It
crashed in the Nevada desert.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'm mixing urban myths now.
Well, I wonder too. It may be also the fear of the zombie isn't just that the taboo of being eaten or of eating others, but also of being eaten by people you might actually know.
I think that's another big part of it, that not only, like, I mean, that, you know, the people that you're with, I mean, you know, not just that, like, you know, a family member might start coming after you, but that you might be the same to them.
It's
right.
The fear of what could be done, what you could do, in a sense, or what they could do once their humanity is stripped away. Although most of the time you don't even have the zombies that people are encountering in most films aren't people that they know necessarily. They are occasionally, but they're usually swiftly dealt with and moved on from there. Is that more of an influence in your book, James? The knowing?
It's a big part of it, especially since you know, one of the main characters has a prior relationship with one of the revivers, so the way that he continues to sort of like hold out hope, you know, that there's something still in there, you know, and maybe there is, you know, something in there, but not what he's hoping for, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's something that's in, which I thought was really fantastic with the very first episode of Walking Dead, which everyone should just see it because the first episode is really, really good, where there is somebody who is a zombie who one of the characters has an intimate connection with, who is indispensable to the family and cannot bring themselves to kill the person in question, because, well, I mean, it takes a lot of guts to, like, your mother or something is infected and she's wandering around as a zombie, and like, what do you, who has the guts to kill their mother? Unless you hate your mother, but I but, you know, most people don't hate their mothers, so, you know, it takes a lot of guts to be able to pull up a rifle and say, I gotta shoot you in the head, Mom.
Well, that's kind of interesting, too, though, is that means that it's easier for people to kill random strangers, you know, somehow. Well, I don't remember what I was reading. There was a comment, though, that somebody made about how they believe that the allure of zombies is actually to do with the allure of being able to randomly kill lots of people without having the guilt. There's no repercussions to killing zombies, which seemed kind of sick and twisted to me, but maybe there's something to it.
It's almost true.
Right? I mean,
at least in a lot of zombie movies, you'll get people who are apprehensive, but then you'll always meet those people who have no problem.
No problem. I mean, those are probably the people that you don't really want to go out to the bar with on a Friday night anyway, but.
True. Yeah. It's curious too. What is it that brings people to where they're no longer inhibited?
That's a very good question. Hopefully not television.
I think it would have happened by now.
Otherwise, I'm doomed.
This is true.
No.
Yes, because they've been saying television's destroying society for 30 years, and somehow society's still here.
And shopping, you know. If it was shopping and television, we'd all be dead already, I guess.
Well, Well, just like science fiction, clearly civilization is also a zombie, since it's been in decline forever. Because I'm sure you're familiar with the arguments too, James, of, you know, science fiction, every other month someone says it's dead, and yet it's still here.
I don't know why people keep saying that.
At this point, it just gets them hits. Someone goes, oh my gosh, somebody else said they're dead, and we got to go read it and say they're wrong or agree. I'm just like, clearly it's not dead, guys. It's 12 more books just came out. We're good.
I'm going to leave a strongly worded comment. Yeah.
Well, it's like the day that Kevin J. Anderson stops writing science fiction books is the day we can say science fiction stops. But that guy's never going to stop. He'll be 10,000 years old and he'll like write 50 billion books.
He'll be writing as a zombie.
Yeah. Okay, so
I mean, maybe you know, the golden age of science fiction is over, but I mean, it's just changed. I mean,
the golden age of a lot of things is over. I mean, they say that about comic books. The golden age is over, and you're like, well, probably a good thing because they kind of sucked back then. Not completely. That was kind of harsh on my part, but.
Yeah, like, I mean, in old Isaac Asimov stories, I mean, sometimes, you know, they use slide rules and stuff and, you know, to chart, like, you know, where they're going to go in a spaceship, people were smoking, you know, like on the bridge and stuff like that. Things change.
I love those stories.
So actually, I'm curious, James. So what brought you to write these books? What is it that was sort of... Because you said you came into the sort of zombie thing kind of, I guess, by accident, and you know, clearly you're interested in the sort of the different versions of zombies. But why did you get into writing these?
It actually started as more of a kind of like a social commentary, if anything. In a very, very early version of this, I came up with this idea a long time ago, back in college. The reanimation aspect of it was, not as much in the forefront. And it just kind of organically evolved that way.
Sorry, go ahead.
You know, by the time I got around to, you know, kind of like really, seriously sitting down. Like it started off as originally I was going to make it a teleplay. And then I worked with it as a, kind of a screenplay idea. When I decided to novelize it, it was much later. And, that was when the whole like terrorism aspect of it sort of came into it. I don't know.
was the zombie portion something, or reanimation, was that something that you just found as a useful vehicle for what you were trying to talk about in terms of the social commentary, or was that always something that, you know, you wanted to work with?
Originally, they sort of more represented, like, they, rather than sort of being, like, you know, outside of the whole thing, they sort of represented another class, sort of.
Zombies were a class unto themselves?
Sort of, yeah. They were a little bit more prevalent, you know, like in just like everyday society. Not like they are in the book, where they're kind of something that's, you know, kind of hidden away. And they certainly don't have any rights or anything. They would actually be kind of like, you know, robots, you know.
Gotcha.
Around. Yeah. You know. And then, you know, eventually I decided not to go in that direction and, came up with the whole three-tier society thing. And then they got moved into the, kind of folded into that as a way to get out of, you know.
Right. So in yours, and you use them as, they use them as soldiers, correct? That's the main, drive for creating them in the first place?
That's their official purpose. They're used to flesh out like a huge army for this, you know, ongoing war that's described in the book. But they have sort of more illicit black market uses, with, you know, for like, say, slave labor and that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. One of the films, and I think it's actually a comedy, is Fido. I don't know if either one of you have seen that.
I really like Fido.
Did you see it? I mean, the fact that they're used as servants, you know, and zombies, I was, the IO9 just put a thing up on the history of zombies and the whole idea of the fact that they were slaves initially because it came out of the voodoo tradition from Haiti. Right. And I think that's something that has stayed kind of, it hasn't been the prevalent usage of zombies for most of the past 6 years or so. But I think it's something that has cropped up now and again. I mean, it's for a moment you get it in Shaun of the Dead, although it's just, it's like his, you know, video gaming slave. But and then Fido brings it up again as a servant basis. And there's been a few others where it has played into that aspect of it, is that, you know, you can create this, you can either use them as personal servants or sex slaves, or, you know, or like you did with the army and sex slaves and, you know, whatever else. So I think that we'll probably, I'm hoping we'll see more of that aspect of zombies, because I think it's actually the more interesting to me. The whole mindless horde thing, I think, is overplayed. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, it's been the dominant usage of zombies for, what, 60 years.
And it's been done many, many times.
Many, many times. I mean, are there any more ways that you can create a mindless horde?
Well, the way that they've been doing it is, well, you just ramp up the horde. I mean, with the 28 days later, 28 weeks later,
they're faster.
Running zombies, and they're zombies that infect instantaneously. You turn into one of them just by a bite, and they also vomit blood on you. So they're not only chasing you to bite you and to kill you, because they're chasing you
to infect you.
They're chasing you to infect you, right. And their ways of infection are far more dangerous than any of the old zombies, where they just kind of like lumbered around and they just bit you and then you ate your brain and technically you're supposed to come back, but how you came back with your out of brain, I'm not sure. But that seems like if you're going to have the mindless horde, well, the way you do it is you just make them even more terrifying than before. Because three fast running zombies is far more terrifying to me than 10,000 slow moving ones.
Yeah, because you hop in a car and you're good.
I agree that the new ones are definitely more frightening than the old style, the purest version of them.
But at the same time, you really only have 28 days. What's the director's name of that film?
Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle. He's. Yeah. Is there anybody else doing those super fast moving and, you know, vomiting blood disease?
Romero's zombies evolve to move faster, but they don't, as far as I know, they don't vomit blood.
Oh, and then the ones from, what's it called? The movies with lots of action and zombies.
That's real specific.
Come on, the newer ones. One's in the desert, one's underground, in the
Resident Evil?
Yeah.
Resident Evil. Aren't they fast moving zombies too?
I think they become, no, because in the first movie they're not. They're sort of slow lumbering things, but they're the mutations, so they get, the mutations are more terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, it's just, beyond that though, what are you going to do with the horde aspect of zombies? And I think that's actually what Boyle was kind of going towards, is one, the old horde wasn't working anymore because it'd been played in 1,000 different ways already. I mean, it's like Romero just seriously needs to stop, because there's only so many, you know, variations of that initial theme that you can work with. So Boyle,
but his zombies evolved.
Well, yeah, but only because he suddenly had Boyle to compete with.
No, his zombies had evolved before that. They'd always been evolving.
I guess so. I don't know. I haven't watched them.
Yeah. Well, his zombies start to gain intelligence.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it Land of the Dead?
I think that's where he started that, yeah.
Yeah, and that movie was awful, but...
Okay, so then you give your zombies intelligence, and then they're a horde of intelligent zombies, but, you know, it's like, if you're intelligent, I mean, how intelligent can you really get? Because if you're a whole, you know, crew of intelligent zombies, then... Are they really going to be... They're not going to be that mindless. They're not going to be a horde anymore.
Well,
they're going to have hierarchies, and, you know, they're going to be like, you go kill those people and bring them back to us. And then you have, like, they're basically just people that are evil.
Well, how many of you have read Cell? Have any of you read Cell by Stephen King?
No, I haven't yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the only Stephen King novel I could get through, and I actually really liked it. But it's because it's basically a zombie novel, and it basically, if it's got zombies in it, I could sit through it even if it's bad. So maybe this isn't a good judge of Stephen King's book. So.
But, okay, so it's intelligent zombies?
Well, the zombies, they kind of are a zombie. They get reset by some sort of a strange signal through cell phones, and everybody just starts going basically kind of crazy and killing each other. Only some of them, not everybody, because it's only people that were infected with the signal. And for the first, I don't know, two-thirds of the book, they're just crazy, violent. Anytime they see someone who is a normal person, and for some reason they can tell, I don't know why, they just go crazy and they try to kill you, and they run and all of that, but they start to evolve towards the end, but they evolve into kind of like a hive mind, and they get like super crazy powers. They can like hover and
what?
Some really, yeah, but it's like it opened up this bizarre side of our brain, you know, because there's an argument, you know, that we don't use all our brains,
right.
And if you untapped it all, we become... Yeah, well, the same thing here, but they become this, like, hive mind. They don't talk anymore. They talk amongst each other mentally, and they evolve and become basically the next superior species on the planet.
Well, one of the things that I read actually likened the Borg to zombies.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because of, you know, their, well, one, they shuffle about. They look kind of dead, and their whole goal is to assimilate you, much like, you know, zombies, well... Boil zombies want to infect you. Other zombies just want to eat you. But, you know, still, they want you dead. And one of them, essentially. Although,
right.
I suppose some zombies don't ever... They just eat you. And then you're never one of them.
So if you get away with, you know.
Right. Yeah. But still, I mean, the majority of zombies, their goal... Somehow, the goal is essentially to convert you.
So we're now transplanting the metaphor to refer to any sort of large population of like-minded individuals that want to convert you. So are we now going to go with the religious argument?
I didn't mean to go there.
That'll probably happen before it's all over.
Yeah.
Well, if you live where I live, where we have the Westboro or whatever, the Dove Special Center, which are very zombie-like, they... want to convert everybody, and they borrow people's babies to get sympathy. It's very weird.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for further disturbing me and pushing me further away from religion. I appreciate it. I didn't mean to go with the whole religious aspect, although I think it's interesting that it ended up going there, you know, because...
Well, if you're thinking about...
There are some similarities.
Sure, with certain groups. I'm not going to say that all religion is that way.
No.
No, we're talking radical religion, sure. Anyway, so let's not go any more into that territory.
It's your fault. I blame you entirely.
So Silent Army is the newest one, and State of Decay is the one that precedes it, and then you have Element Zero, and when is that coming out?
That is coming out April 11th, I think, or what? April 5th.
Congratulations on all three, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, I am totally reading them now that I've read about them.
Now, how interconnected are all three of them? I mean, for those of the listeners who have no idea about your books and are just discovering now, I mean, do they need to start with State of Decay, or can they go into Silent Army?
I would start with State of Decay. Yeah, if it's really one large, it's one continuous story basically. There's like a pause of a couple of years, I think, in between each one. But I mean, it's, I saw a review from somebody who, jumped in and started with the Silent Army. And although he seemed to enjoy it, he did say that he felt a little lost. And I think that's probably going to be the case.
Okay. So. All right. So everybody listening, you got to start with State of Decay first.
Sorry, Duke. You're going to have to go get State of Decay now.
Yes. And I just got to say, I mean, I know an email I said thank you, but for the listeners who don't know, when I get an option for like a special request on a signing in a book, I ask people to draw a Viking amoeba, and James drew probably the most badass Viking amoeba ever in the history. I will put up a picture.
In the history of amoeba Vikings? Are there lots of them?
Yeah, well, I've only had one other author draw a Viking amoeba, and this is the lord of all Viking amoebas. This is the king.
I think
he's got the
challenge.
Full-on helmet and the spikes and like double axes and a skull and everything. Like, yeah, it's impressive.
Wow,
I'll put up a picture so everybody can see, because awesome. Like super brownie points. Like I will be following you like a hawk for the rest of your life. No, I'm just kidding.
He will
not
going to
stalk you.
Yeah. Duke does.
But
that.
I do appreciate that. Like the effort that took. That is really cool, man. Thank you.
No problem. I'm glad you liked it.
That
was the best request I've ever gotten.
Oh, is it? Oh, fantastic.
So I was going to say, most people are like, oh, I don't know. I'm going to say, you know, like two Bob or whatever. No, I want a Viking amoeba.
And he even emailed me to make sure he understood what I was requesting.
I was like, is that a band or something? I'm like...
yeah,
very
it was
nice.
Fantastic.
Well, you're leaving an impression, anyway.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, yeah. I'm very happy to have that in my collection, and it'll be like when I die, somebody will pay millions of dollars, and they'll have all these cool pictures of Viking amoebas from authors. It'll be amazing. And yours will be the top. It'll be like the number one with the...
Selling
number one
millions.
Viking amoeba ever. Yeah.
Well, eventually you can just create a collection. You can publish a book with all your Viking amoebas.
Like a coffee table book.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness, that would be so cool.
Yes, yes. You must
SFWA
do it.
Could release that.
You must do it. You must stalk many other authors and get them to do that. That's your new goal. Sorry. Totally off
all right,
topic,
so,
but
yeah. So before we close out, where can folks find out about you, James, and obviously your books, and of course to stalk you, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I have two sites. I have like the official book site, which is www.stateofdecay.net, and my regular website is just www.zombiezero.com, with the zero being just the number zero.
Cool. Very yeah,
nice.
Everyone should go check out his book. Definitely get State of Decay, and especially if you like the sort of futuristic sort of take on the zombies. And clearly, as James was you were describing, this is not quite the same as like the hordes, but they're it's yeah. much more complicated. So yeah. which is useful. It's nice that we have that. So.
They're more replicant than zombie, I think I would say.
Oh, right up your alley, Duke.
Yes, yes, like Philip K. Dick.
Ooh.
Or, well, I replicant. They don't
Try
call
not
them
to
replicant.
Have a geek-gasm. Sorry.
They call them replicants in Blade Runner. I'm sorry.
Yes, that's true.
And Ridley Scott is a terrible human being, but yeah.
Just
but anyway. No, but Blade Runner is obviously a fantastic book, and that's it. That, there we go. So that a really interesting way to think about that is replicants, which is totally opens up very different doors in my head. I may now
remind
have
me
to
not to go
that,
in
yeah.
any of those doors. It's the same.
Cool. Well, is there anything you want anybody else to know about you, about your books, about I mean things you keep in your closet? I don't. I mean,
just by State of Decay. I'm sorry, I'm bad at this. No, I don't really have anything.
No, is it also in digital format?
Yes, you can get it for the Kindle.
Oh, good.
Oh, fantastic.
Just
and
the Kindle,
I'm
though?
Assuming then also for the Nook?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Just making sure I need to make sure that I tell my husband to buy me the correct, you know, ebook for Christmas.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Okay, well, perfect. Well, we will make sure there's all sorts of links for your books and all of that and your websites, and we will point lots of people your direction so they get your book. And it's in mass market paperback, which is perfect. You can buy like 12 and give them to your family members, you know, your grandma, you know, she should be reading zombie novels, right?
Great stocking stuffer.
Yes, yes, perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show to talk about zombies and your books. We appreciate it.
Thanks, James.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys, for having me.
Well, we'll be right back with our reading and writing segment. And we're back with our reading and writing section.
Yay!
Yay! Now that we're done with our discussion with James Knapp, mm-hmm. it was very awesome to come onto the show, and obviously that actually recorded, unlike certain other things that I messed up on that you'll discover in
a few weeks.
In a week, actually, after this goes live. You'll find out about that. And unless you already know, in which case, I'm sure Jen will make sure anybody who listens to the show knows, but...
Oh, yeah, I will.
But we'll talk about that another time. But anyway, so our reading and writing section this week. So, Jen, are you reading anything new?
I am finally reading something new because Yay. I'm an idiot, and I left The End of Mr. Y at my parents' house when I was 20 pages from the end. So I don't get to actually learn what The End of Mr. Y is.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard anybody do. Gosh.
Except for you forgetting to record an interview.
Shut up. I hate you.
So,
what are you reading?
I am now reading, courtesy of the lovely Mia, one of our two dedicated listeners.
Maybe the only two? No, we know some other people listen. Shh.
Anyway,
you listen.
She sent me a while back The Dark Tower because we had had that whole thing about how they're making the Dark Tower movie and TV show too.
Yep.
So she was like, oh, gasp, how could you not have read that? And so she bought me the box set, the first four books, and I am now reading The Gunslinger. And I'm very happy to be doing so.
Oh, well, that's good.
It is good. What are you reading?
I'm still reading The Poison Throne, but I think I'm going to get into the steampunk lesbian anthology.
That sounds hot.
I don't know if it's hot so much as fascinating, but sure, if we can go with hot.
Sorry.
I don't think it's erotic. I think it just has lesbians.
Damn.
Yeah.
That was cool.
And then Res Aliens number 4, which is edited by John Ottinger of Grasping for the Wind. And he sent me a review copy, so I've been meaning to get to that.
Cool.
So I'm gonna do that over this. Well, actually, probably by the time you guys listen to this, I've already read some of that because we're recording on a Monday, and this is going up on a Sunday.
In 2 weeks. No, in 1 week.
No, in 1 week. At the end of this week.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll probably be done with some of that. But anyway, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm just writing papers at this point, so that's all I'm doing for writing.
Have you noticed that there's some weird time dilation with doing podcasts?
How do you mean?
It's like we open a wormhole into the future.
But
or the past.
But you didn't realize that podcasts are time machines?
I didn't until just now.
Oh. Well, I mean, in the world where when we started this podcast, World War II never happened. And
really?
Then we changed that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. In the original universe, I wrote this down so that I could remember it. For some reason, that's a loophole that just it doesn't get erased. But what originally happened was Hitler just started a bakery.
Oh.
Yeah.
I bet he made really awesome strudel.
No, actually, they weren't very good. He went bankrupt in about 3 weeks.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah. And then he started World War II?
No. Actually, he was stabbed in a bar fight.
Oh, okay. I like that
gay,
version of
a Jewish man.
Huh.
Yeah. He was also a gypsy.
That's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So are you writing anything this week?
I just said I'm writing papers.
Oh, right. And the story of how there was no World War II, but...
I like how you just totally skipped over, like, this whole crazy idea. Yeah, anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I'm only writing... I'm working on papers right now, and nobody wants to hear about those, so...
I've decided to pretend that I'm writing something this week.
You're gonna write our time travel story?
No, I'm writing my own time travel story.
Podcast. I'm trying to make the hot tub time machine, but for a podcast.
Podcast time machine. Anyway. I'm writing a story about a girl who wakes up one morning to discover that it's 200 years in the future, but all the people in her life are the same.
So, what?
That's the story I'm pretending to write.
Oh, okay.
And she has to figure out if she's insane, if she's actually traveled in time, or if she spent too long living in virtual reality.
All right. Well, can I pretend to be writing something, too?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm writing a story about a kid who has a magical bean that just tells time.
That tells time? That sounds epic. That'd be one damn handy bean.
All right, give him the question of the week.
The question of the week is, which fictional universe would you want to live in and why? How about you, Duke?
We're supposed to answer it this time? Oh, shoot.
Answer the question now.
Honestly, all of the fictional... Oh, Harry Potter. Let's just go with that, because that one at least, like... It's an easy choice, but I was thinking all the science fiction ones, and I'm really like, those are really actually terrible places to live.
Absolutely horrifying places to live.
No, even the series that I like, I just don't want to live there.
I would live in the Harry Potter universe with the caveat that I wouldn't live in J.K. Rowling's version, but I'd live in the fan version that takes place after the end of book 7 or 8 or whatever it is, and in which Benjamin Franklin is the head of the American Wizarding School.
You're talking that one book, the one really famous fan fiction book. Yeah.
Yes, it was epic. I loved it. And it was better than the originals.
All right. Well, you can have that. All right.
Well, I'm sorry, because they have a beetle bug as their transportation. I mean, that's awesome. So that's where I'd live.
Anyway, so you can send your responses. You can send it by email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send it by Twitter.
Twitter.com/SkiffyandFanty.
Or you can leave a comment on our blog.
SkiffyandFanty.wordpress.com.
And that's the ways you can contact us. So we will be back next week with actually something that will finally be recorded.
Hopefully.
Since someone on this podcast is a frackin' moron.
Not me.
Yeah, it's me. I'm not even going to pretend anymore. Yeah, it's me. So we'll be back next week, and hopefully it'll be as good as what we originally thought we had recorded.
Because originally it was epic.
Yeah, it was pretty damn good. But we'll make it even better, because our interviewee is pretty kick-ass. So.
Yep. Yep. See you next week.
All right, bye, guys.
Autobots, roll out!